Hello, everyone, and welcome back once again to HOA It's a True Story. I'm your host, Reagan Brown. We are grateful to have with us today Jasmine Hale. She's an attorney and partner with Burning and Weil Law Firm. We are discussing a new trend today where vendors have been financing repairs for HOAs. What are the problems and what are the benefits? Thank you for joining us today, Jasmine. We appreciate you coming and welcome to HOA It's a True Story.
Thanks so much for having me. I'm super excited to be here.
So before we jump into this dilemma, why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself and how you got involved in the HOA industry? It's always a story.
I was like, I'm not sure anybody like goes to kindergarten and is like, you know what? I'm going to be an HOA person.
That's so right.
You know, I was actually on the developer side before the Great Recession of 2008. I loved that field. And, you know, at a certain point after Bear Stearns and Lehman crashed, you know, all the capital markets and like the financing dried up. And so I sort of looked at the principles of the development office that I worked at. And I was like, here's this much runway. I'm fairly positive I'm going to need to get out off the airplane. You're not going to die, but it's going to be a pretty bleak, you know, future for some amount of time. So an alumna's firm, the amazing Lisa Tashton down in Southern California at Beaumont Tashton, they had an opening. I went and interviewed, and I'd always anticipated I would go back to the development side because I really loved it. And you know, we're almost 20 years into this side of the industry, and I never left. I absolutely, you know, I found that apparently working with HOAs and boards of directors is like my catnip. I love it. It's complicated. It's challenging. It always changes. And I have enjoyed it ever since.
Well, you're right. Every time I ask somebody this question, they never tell me, yeah, I wanted to go into HOA. It's definitely kind of a random place that you fall into. So I think we all have that in common. So what we're talking about is some of the HOAs have been coming up a little short from reserves and this sort of thing, because so many things have hit in the last 5 years. And they're starting to try to figure out new ways of financing. And one of those is where vendors have offered to finance the repair. What are the shortfalls with that if somebody wanted to get involved with a vendor financing?
There's definitely shortfalls. Sort of depends on the caveats and the terms and conditions of the, you know, particular financing agreement with the vendor. One of the shortfalls is, does the association's governing documents allow for it to, you know, does the board, can they enter into the agreement at all? You'd also have to make sure, you know, is the vendor realistically able to finance it? It was basically that's the vendor bearing the costs of the project all up front, labor and materials, while the association pays them back. You know, so a lot of vendors may not be able to finance that because they operate on thinner margins. So you've got those two different issues that you'd want to look at. I mean, there's always, you know, just the pros and cons of what are the terms themselves.
So can a board enter into a long or short-term financing agreement without any conflict with their CCNRs?
You know, ask a lawyer, what's our normal response? It depends.
So, yeah.
You know, many governing documents, sometimes it's in the CC&Rs, other times it's going to be in the bylaws. And for absolute good measure and fun, I have some associations where it's discussed in both documents, sort of conflicting, and that's always fun. There's often limitations or restrictions on a board's ability to enter into any kind of an agreement. So whether it was financing related or otherwise, you know, sometimes it's about the duration or the term of the agreement. You can't enter into a 1 year or a 3 year agreement without ownership approval. Other times there might be parts of the governing documents that not only address how long an agreement could be entered into, but they'll simply require membership approval when the, and you know, how that looks can be really different. I mean, on the one hand, when you're borrowing from a bank, like you're taking money from business A and paying it to business C. And that's borrowing. You know, there could be an argument that a vendor financing is not exactly borrowing because you're like, well, I'm paying company C to do the work and they're just allowing me to pay it over a longer stretch of time. So, you know, it would really depend on what the documents say. But in the civil code and in the corporations code, those are sort of the two big kahunas in HOA law as far as statutes. Not the only ones, but the primary one. There's nothing that expressly says an association can or cannot borrow with or without membership or shareholder approval. So at least it's open for business.
So based on CC&Rs, they may or may not have to get a vote to do that, right? So they could most likely have to have their attorney review everything before they entered into it anyway.
I would certainly recommend that.
You know, some people think they're smarter than the average bear and they go out and do stuff like this.
You know, I have encountered many an HOA where it's apparently, you know, fire ready aim and they will have gone and done the thing. And then they're like, oof,
now we need to done that. Yeah.
Yeah. Or bad. Like, can we sort of scale this back? And you're like, oh, it's a little bit difficult once the contract is engaged.
So if they are going to be financed by the vendor or the business partner, is there a interest rate that they can't exceed, or can they engage in any kind of contract with them?
That would be sky's the limit.
It would be, huh?
You know, I mean, because under, you know, different laws, you're entitled to agree to higher interest rates or higher payments of whatever sort than what the civil code may normally imply, you know, require on kind of terms. So parties are voluntarily able to contract to terms that they might not otherwise have been bound by. So, you know, that's one of the good things for vendors is, hey, you could, you know, obtain interest payments, although that gets difficult because, you know, vendors, like for vendor agreements, you know, civil code, the one thing that it does impose in terms of restrictions and limitations is that associations can only pledge their assets under civil code 5735 when the assignment is made to a financial institution or a chartered lender, so basically a bank. And so, you know, now you get into a scenario where like, okay, so I'm going to venture a guess that, you know, contractor A or asphalt company B is not also a chartered financial institution. They have enough things on their mind. And so you've got a scenario where, okay, the association cannot pledge its assessments because by law it says they can't because it's not the right kind of a, you know, vendor or an institution. And so now the vendor is basically just going to have an unsecured contract. And so, you know, does that mean they're going to charge more interest to take more risk? I mean, it's basically shifting risk from the HOA over to the vendor by saying, we can't promise you really any collateral for this financing or this loan that you're making to us. So, you know, hope it works out. You know, so that's something to just keep in mind.
So I know a business partner that teamed up with like a household finance company, and they were financing work, but splitting the interest and income with the HFI company. So they would be considered a charter, right? So they could do something like that, and then the board could pledge assets.
In that scenario, I mean, the devil would certainly be in the details as far as who the actual financier was. And, you know, I would certainly hope that HOA used legal counsel to review their agreement just to make sure everything's kosher. But I mean, in theory, yes, that kind of financing and pledging of assets could work.
Okay. So can current board members then encumber future boards to those assessment increases if they needed to pay for these types of ventures?
So that's an interesting one. In theory, yes. I've definitely worked with boards of directors where they don't have a restriction on the duration or the term of a contract. So they're allowed to sign a contract that's more than a year, let's just say. And you say, okay, great. So that's not the restriction, but built into the contract, let's just say it's 10 years as an example. It's going to be a proposed assessment increase. And that means future boards are bound by this current existing agreement. So in theory, it's possible. The interesting thing would be, well, what happens if future board is like, we're not going to do this any longer? Then they would run into scenarios where they might be breaching the contract and they would have risk because of that.
Mm-hmm. Have you yourself ever experienced any of your HOA clients engaging in business partner financing projects?
Sure.
You have. So you think it's getting more popular and more common?
I think that it is by necessity. I mean, like you said at the very beginning of the podcast, we've got more and more communities that are mm-hmm. having larger and more expensive capital projects. You know, we've got HOAs that are as old as I am, and that's normal now. I'm no longer the spring chicken I was when I started in the industry. And so you sit there and you're like, okay, well, you know, a 40, 50 year old project, I mean, that's from the 70s. That's kind of when the explosion of common interest communities in California really started to take shape. I think in large part because of Prop 13 back then and the, you know, mm-hmm. change to the tax issue.
Sure.
And so those communities didn't have to, you know, deal with, hey, repiping the whole building or re-siting the whole building for the last 30, 40 years. But those systems, they're now at the end of their roads and you're, you know, having to do those major, major projects. And the issue is that a lot of communities, I mean, if you go by the research done by CAI's Foundation for Community Association Research, FCAR, they did a study a couple years ago now and basically found that like 80% of HOAs, not just California, but like across the US, are underfunded relative to their maintenance obligations. And the degree of underfunded is, you know, for some, it's staggering. I mean, you could look at the Surfside right. collapse down in Florida and, you know, that building collapsed for a lot of reasons, but in part because the association was radically underfunded and they were under maintained for a really long period of time. And so, you know, those scenarios, hopefully not to that same tragic result, exist everywhere. And so I think that you're going to have more HOAs feeling hamstrung, like, hey, unless our vendor finances this project, we can't do it. And I think you're going to find a lot of vendors who are, you know, maybe able to connect with financial partners mm-hmm. where they can absorb that upfront risk. Because the reality is HOAs are a pretty darn good candidate to lend to. I mean, they're not going anywhere.
What happens if they engage in a financing of a project and then they're still underfunded with their reserves and something else comes along and they go to the bank? Is the bank or the lender's going to look at them differently because they're already in a vendor financed program?
Very good question. I would certainly assume, yes, that's to be the case. You own GB Group for a long mm-hmm. time. Like, so you definitely know lenders, when they come in, they're kind of intrusive on the look, you know, underneath.
Yeah.
The
they,
like,
yeah.
You want to know, like, what I ate for breakfast a year ago?
Give up your firstborn child. Yep, they go for it.
Precisely. You're like, here they are. I suspect that it would not be possible if you had already been in a vendor financing agreement that a bank would also loan you money unless they were able to lump that in to the amount that they were lending for whatever additional project so that they held the full amount of the mm-hmm. collateralized obligation that the association has.
Well, and I could also see where maybe some of the small associations that don't qualify well for bank loans, this might be an option for them to start on their recovery of maintenance programs, right? You know, these 10, 14 unit complexes, they don't qualify to get some of the financing from some of the bank loans. You know, this may be the very option they have. So in that regard, I could see where it's really a good thing for them that there's an opportunity.
Absolutely agreed. I had a HOA last year. It was 27 units. So it's a little community relative to, you know, a lot of the larger communities that we both deal with. And I mean, they had long standing capital projects that they needed to do, new roof, new boiler, new hallway, everything.
Right.
I mean, and you know, the project cost was like $600K, which among 27 owners is like $30,000 a whack. And the problem is that even if their owners had approved a vent, you know, a like bank loan, there's no bank that was going to lend them money because it's just too little for a bank.
Yeah, and that's unfortunate because I think if they, like the Surfside kind of analogy you gave, where they went for so long without doing their maintenance and without doing anything, trying to keep their monthly dues low, then they pay the price later and have to get that big boost back into their funding. But it would be, I think, advantageous for some of these smaller associations to ask for it right in the bid process.
Yeah.
Because I think, you know, sometimes we see projects go out the door to a less qualified contractor because they're offering some kind of financing program where that may not really be the very best program for them, but it seems like it's their only option. So it might be something they want to consider asking right at the front of the proposal process. We are looking for somebody who would be willing to do this so that they can get apples to apples kinds of options from the front end and not trying to make it up on the back end.
No, that's a really, really smart like suggestion. I would absolutely recommend that. If an association has a sense at the beginning of a project that they're not going to have the capital, whether it's the combo of reserves plus operating allocation plus even potential like special assessment or regular assessment, you know, and they're like, oh, okay, if they know at the beginning, and you almost always do, that you just don't have the funds, but you need to do it, then I would certainly recommend that they put that as part of their RFP process. You know, certainly one of the things that I've found over the years, Reagan, is, you know, associations have such delayed and deferred maintenance that they get into the emergency assessment category because it's no longer just, hey, siding, it looks kind of wonky and, you know, like it's not aesthetically pleasing, but you're like, well, now it's allowing water to intrude and there's a lot of like threats to safety. Well, that gets a HOA into the, hey, the board is entitled to pass this, whatever the amount of the assessment as an emergency assessment, instead of having the typical 5% limitation that they normally have under the civil code. And so you get into a scenario like, okay, so the association goes and levies this crazy high assessment. Let's just say it's like $50,000 a unit. And the board got to do it because the, you know, law says we're allowed to approve an emergency assessment of any amount. And you're like, okay, but how are they realistically going to collect those funds from their homeowners? You know, I mean, that's a real limitation that sometimes they may need to build into their cake. We're broke and we're going to need for you to, you know, foot this bill for us as we, you know, move along the project.
Well, I think that this is going to be a trend because I don't think a lot of people are really savvy on how to map out a recovery program when they get themselves underfunded. They're doing a good job with reserve analysts, but even they can only do so much to get the project work kind of tied in correctly, right? I did a white paper study on a city in Alabama where I think it was the mayor or the governor of the state one or the other, when they got into office, realized that they had not been keeping up their infrastructure for so long that they were on the verge of real disaster. And it was a woman that went in and very methodically put together a recovery program. And yes, they had to come up with a fund. And yes, they had to increase taxes in this case. But she did it in a way that it stair-stepped it and didn't hit them with the big one-time huge assessment. And then each year and she went in and looked at the projects to make sure that they piggybacked correctly. So that sure. One fed into the next one and into the next one and into the next one. And within a 4-year period of time, she was able to recover their infrastructure and not completely annihilate the tax, basis. So she got to be really popular, but right when it happened is when COVID hit, was when she finished. So of course it didn't catch much steam in the public eye because COVID took over the news and the social media, but she did an amazing job. And I wish more people would take a look at how she put together this really cohesive program and chipped away at it every year so that it didn't hurt them so badly. They got the complete recovery. It brought back all their infrastructure. And she used some creative ways to increase revenue back into the state to help them with programs that would sustain it. So super interesting. And I kind of always use that as an opportunity to think about the same HOA, right? Just chipping away at it, really consistently putting together a program and then rolling it out from there.
Sure. And it's a good reminder, especially to managers. I know that they are a large constituent of your audience on the podcast, is that the order of projects, there's often a optimal order of projects. I've got a great example of a co-op building in the city, San Francisco. And they had, it's a 100-year-old building, so unsurprisingly, they've got a whole bunch of different projects. And happily, these owners were, happy, ready, willing, and able financially to do the project. But they realized when the project started that, it was really only intended to be a roof project to start.
Right.
And then it was like, oh, hey, we're going to be paying this like $250,000 for scaffold. And if we don't do all the other projects that we're going to need to do in the next like 2-3 years while the scaffold's up, we're going to have to pay a whole bunch more money in 2 years to get the scaffold back up. And then it was, oh, hey, and they didn't realize at the start of the project, unfortunately, that there was this optimal order of which project occurred when, and they were kind of happily able to fall into it. But it's definitely something that associations would be well served, like engaging a construction consultant, and not just being like, oh, we need a new roof. Let's just get the bid for the new roof. Because a lot of times, if you're at the needs a new roof emergency crisis level, you're probably going to have other projects too. And you sit there and you say, hey, are there other projects? I know it's going to cost money. I know we don't want to incur these expenses, but today's new roof plus new siding is going to be, X factor less than if we did one project finished and then another project. And so I, really, really love your reminder about like economies of scale, efficiency, and like figuring out the optimal order of projects so that you can.
Absolutely. And if you need a job, Jasmine, to go share that with our boards, we're happy to hire you. So the name of the podcast is HOA. It's a true story. Do you have a story you could share with us today? Another one?
I was like, I know when I recorded the last one, I told you about a fun story when I was a younger pup lawyer, and it was down in Southern California, and a homeowner, he owned all the top floor units of the high-rise building that he lived in. He converted a part of the penthouse units, the rooftop. So it was what he perceived to be his balcony or his deck area. But for the rest of the HOA, it was their roof. And he went and installed a bunch of like heavy pots and all kinds of deck flooring, and the HOA went berserk. Of course, you know, legal action.
Screwed it right into the membrane.
Yep. All the things. And it encountered like years of legal disputes and whatnot. And we were at a mediation, one of several. And, you know, I'm pretty sure, you know, the press down in Los Angeles called him the Hollywood Playboy, because he was, you know, one of those kinds of players, like out, a man about town, like throwing all of that. At the mediation, you know, we had an attorney, like just the attorney, opposing counsel, and the mediator, and he barges into the attorney caucus that we were having at the time. It was in person, and he brought me flowers. I was like, what the hell are you doing? Like, get out, get out. And he was like, I thought maybe if I brought you flowers, you would be nicer to me. And I'm like, no, I'm literally going to be meaner now.
Oh my God, that's awesome. They think they're doing the right thing, but yeah, not quite. Well, if somebody wanted to get in touch with you to have you review a contract for them, would you have a way for them to reach you?
Sure thing. They can always, shoot me an email. Probably the easiest way to connect with me, jhale@birdingwild.com, or they can give the office a call.
And you have a website?
Yes, www.birdingwild.com. So that's another way to research. And then, heck, you can probably just Google me at this point, and I'm sure I've got a litany of Google.
Yeah, Google's changed everything. Well, thank you so much, Jasmine. And if for whatever reason they can't find you on any of those resources, they can always reach out to us at inquiry@gbgroupinc.com, and we'll be happy to forward on the information to you. So thank you again. I really appreciate your time today, and we hope to have you back on the show again real soon.